Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Or Collision. So, Sean, we were wondering where House of Black were. They're back. They were back three times tonight, interfering in multiple matches. The good side is they ended the show with battle lines being drawn. It seems like they set up, if they want, a 10-man tag match with FTR and Blackpool Combat Club teaming up against Ricky Starks, Big Bill, and all three members of House of Black. The bad news is the key matches on the show had lights flashing on and off and interference. And, if you got invested in the matches, you didn't really get resolutions. Fortunately, there was some good wrestling, which helped make up for it a little bit. But I'm just not sure if it's worth it if you're trying to get over House of Black as a disruptive force, if the price you pay is teaching your viewers, we have a whole show full of matches that don't end other than squashes. What do you think?
Yeah, it just took me out of the show. Happened so many times, and then they did the same thing with the devil showing up at one time as well. So that was another disruption. I'm not sure it was worth it for the, in terms of getting things set up. I think they could have done it better than that. It's just very jarring between that and, a bunch of, I guess in the least, a lot of the matches were inconsequential, I guess.
I don't know if that's a the matches were inconsequential, so therefore it didn't matter that we didn't give you finishes. It's a week. It's like, the car broke. It's like if you buy a used car and it breaks down after 2 days, and the guy who sells it to you goes, yeah, but it was kind of a crappy used car to begin with. Who wants to drive that? Well, yeah, but it still broke down, and it was my transportation.
I mean, I had someone message me and asked if Tony booked this on the way to the arena tonight. So,
I think that's a good. I mean, we know Jeff Jarrett put a lot of time to it because there's always 17 things happening in the last 2 minutes of any match that he's part of putting together. But beyond that, could they have done less to promote an AEW World Tag Team Title match than they did this main event?
Yeah, it just felt like, it just felt like nothing mattered on the, on the show. Rampage feels that way sometimes, but not to this extent. It's just like, And then the big angle at the end was like, it just felt like such a, here's this bit, all that was for this big payoff, and to get.
Yeah. Just beating up Ricky Starks?
To get Moxley back out there.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
I thought this was a show that had a lot of the traits. Like if you wanted to kind of sit down and say, all right, what's AEW's strength? You'd say, well, on the way to the arena, Tony Khan has some really good wrestlers, and he can throw them into matches, and you'll get two or three good matches in a two-hour show. And those wrestlers will work hard and deliver. And that has not always been the case with every wrestling company, whether they were doing a good job booking and had a really solid identity, or the opposite, like WCW at the end. You didn't always have that kind of guarantee of, a Danielson-Andrade-type match, or what we saw in the main event, which was, good stuff. But and it's not nothing. There's a lot on this show that I think is illustrative of where AEW has gone off track, over time. Some of it has been pretty consistently there. The lack of building up your main event match during the show to kind of get people emotionally invested in it. So by the time the bell rings, you're excited about the match. They fell back on not doing that on this show. They opened with Danielson against Andrade, and it was just, hey, here's two wrestlers, watch them wrestle. There was no context. You didn't know what the stakes were. And they got rid of those sound bites at the beginning of Collision, which was a little bit of a shorthand crutch for building up matches. Like, hey, Russ is going to talk for 10 to 20 seconds, but I'll take that over nothing. You'd rather have a really good backstory and a sound bite the soundbite just reminds you of what that backstory is. It reminds you of why you're excited about the lineup tonight. And it's fun to hear from people. You know, it's fun to hear from the wrestlers in a match, even if it's brief. But they dropped that the last 2 weeks. So that was a problem. And then it's just a dork fest. You know, I mean, some of the whatever's going on with Max Caster and the weird Ruby Soho promo where she's declaring she wants a title shot a minute after they announced she's getting one. So they got that out of order, unless I misunderstood. Yeah, I mean, on and on. And it was an enjoyable at times show because some good wrestling was there. And I can understand if that's someone tunes in and that's all they want, they'd be reasonably happy with aspects of the show. But from a booking, from a getting the most out of your matches, from a angle standpoint, from just a company that seems cool and red hot and knows what it is, this was one of the weaker episodes of Collision and weaker episodes of AWTV. Other, you know, excluding Rampage, because this was a lot like Rampage. Sean, over to you for commenting on any of that.
Well, you know, the one thing that, you know, I like college football, and you know what I mean, and the baseball, I watched the baseball. The playoffs are exciting to me. So, like, tonight there's, like, seven things on that are more exciting than what, like, AEW. If, I wouldn't mind if they brought something exciting to the table, but, man, it just felt like, what was the reason to watch this show tonight? There was no real hook. They're carting jobbers out there to, you know, and getting matches interrupted, and just a lot of it feels inconsequential, and a lot of it's just weird, and it's just like they, like you touched on, they had that one good match, and they like it's a dream match, and like I'm like, this is some of like the worst traits of indie booking, you know, like where that works if you have one show a month and 12 a year, but not when you're running three shows a week, 50, you know what I mean, times 52.
Well, part of the problem is I mean, they have roster depth.
Yeah.
In terms of quantity and in certain respects, in terms of quality, in terms of wrestlers who can go out and have a good match, what they don't have is the, and it's been a weakness of AEW, the star power to, like, taking those wrestlers and making them feel like stars and then dropping them into a setting where it seems like what they're doing, as you said, is consequential. It has high stakes. And when there are stakes, like a tag team title match, making you feel like coming up later is something you're going to want to stay tuned for because it's a big deal in the AEW narrative and the ecosystem and the story of AEW. This is a really big deal coming up later, and you're going to want to see it, and here's why. And it takes takes some work, but it also takes just having in your head, which I don't know if Tony Khan does, that's just sort of boxes you need to check if you're going to do a two-hour wrestling show. Like, it's not optional to not do it if you want to be successful, and it just doesn't seem to cross his mind as long as your friend said, he can write a show on the way to the arena matching some good wrestlers against each other. It wasn't a boring show, but it was a frustrating show because it really did epitomize or at least illustrate some, I think, rather easily correctable issues with AEW that would make the efforts of the wrestlers mean more and cause viewers who want to like AEW and want to feel invested in what's happening be more apt to tune in over all the other things on TV on Saturday nights.
Yeah, and I think you hit on one thing. Like, I was watching and I was like, God, it feels like no one important, you know what I mean? Like, no one important's been on since Danielson wrestled, and the crowd was so dead. And like, it wasn't until Moxley showed up, and I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Finally, someone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're hitting a lot of talking points in kind of the opening segment here, but I want to spend more time on Eddie Kingston and Jeff Jarrett and what they're doing there. And actually, I want to expand on a few other segments and get a little more expansive and specific about where I think they came up short or why it just was a bad idea or why it made no sense. I think this show had a lot of those. And I mean, to go back to the bad habit of treating Collision like Rampage, where the show just opens, the bell rings, and there's ring introductions in a match, and you don't hear from the wrestlers. It's not apparent what the stakes are. You have no reason to be invested either way in what happens, unless you're just a super fan. But AEW's not going to grow. And super fans who want to see good wrestling get to see plenty of good wrestling in any given month. But if there's a college football game on or there's some Netflix series they want to catch up on, you've got to work hard. You've got to work harder than Tony Khan is doing, and smarter, really, to get those people to think, I need to make Collision my priority. And they're not doing that, Sean.
No, I mean, like, I mean, there's just there's a big, it seems like there's a bigger spotlight in college football this year, too, with Deion Sanders getting more people into the game and some really key games on this week and a UFC pay-per-view. And you have to do something to you know what I mean, to be exciting and stand out. Just felt like they took not that they took a week off, but like large portions of the show. And maybe one thing that we haven't hit on was a lot of it was they're promoting, you know, three big matches for this Battle of the Belts that's going. So yeah, that, I mean, you know, a lot of, I guess, Collision was kind of a build up to the, you know, getting people to stay for three good matches for the last hour.
Yeah, but they did a crap job doing that. It took up time.
Yeah, very good. Like, the interviews are horrible.
They're talking about things that happened on Rampage.
Yeah.
Like, now tell me what happened on Rampage. I mean, it's just head-to-the-forehead stuff. They only promote and talk to people who watch everything, hit refresh on AW Twitter X all the time, watch every YouTube video, or on Reddit constantly, reading every website, listening to every podcast, and thinking, eat, drinking, and sleeping AEW storylines all the time. And they're getting that audience, but nothing more. That's the problem. So it is frustrating. I would like to say Tony Khan is just spread too thin, but I just don't think Tony Khan, for all his strengths as a visionary, as a super fan who has an eye for good wrestling and putting matches together that a significant number of people want to see, he's lacking in other areas that I think are essential to growth, essential to success. And this show was, again, very illustrative of that. And he needs to add to the team, but I don't know if he'd even know who to hire if it doesn't land on his radar and he's not self-aware of the shortcomings of a show like this, which is, again, symptomatic of issues that AEW's had since the first Dynamite era.
Yeah, and it just, I don't, you know, he has added, you know, tons of people behind the scenes, and it just, maybe he needs to cede a little more control to them to help him.
Well, know, I don't know who those
are things a little bit.
I don't know who the people behind the scenes are who understand what I believe is obvious that needs to be done, that WWE is doing pretty consistently and pretty well. Like, WWE, there's, you know, last night's SmackDown, as we talked about on the post-show, it was fine. It wasn't anything special. It was kind of an off week in terms of feeling super urgent, but it had some significant things, you know, that happened. You know, Bianca Belair returning, for instance, and Logan Paul cutting his first promo in a while, John Cena making an appearance, and that was a crowd-friendly thing. But other than that, it was just sort of there. That's going to happen sometimes. But the thing that they do well is obvious in terms of getting the most out of everything that they're doing. And, or, you know, that's probably overstating. They don't always get the most out of it, but they make an effort and they understand formatically you need to hit what your main event is. You need to hype it. You need to make everything that you do seem like a big deal. And you need to make people who you decide are your stars feel like big stars by protecting them and framing them that way. And AEW just didn't do that tonight. And that's not Tony Khan's strength. So it is frustrating. Even, you know, you talk about them building up Battle of the Belts. What do they do to make you care about John Silver getting a title shot? And how do they remind you that he earned a title shot? Or fill you in on it, not remind you, tell you if you didn't see the setup for it, and they didn't do it, and it's flabbergasting to me. It's an ongoing weakness of AEW so often, and I just don't understand the mindset that says you can throw Orange Cassidy and John Silver on my screen right now as I've got Battle of the Belts on in the background. You can just throw that on TV with, you know, the nonchalant Orange Cassidy promo and think that's going to hold viewers and increase interest in the match other than the details you just presented.
And the 75th squash of the night. Joe.
I love squash matches.
I don't mind them. I really don't if they enhance the talent, but it just feels like they're not framed to enhance the talent. Like Joe beats them and, you know, he just, I don't know, he might say something here, but I'm not going to hear it, but it just feels like in the other way they did it, like the crowd didn't react, the talent didn't look like they cared. That you know what I mean? Just have them beat them with their move and focus. Like, and you really can't do it with more than, you know, you can't. I don't think you can really do more than like do that with more than one person on the show. because then it just seems like it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not
making people special. Right. I think you could do 2 hours of squash matches and make it more interesting than some of the shows AEW puts on if you do it right. I think you could do no squash matches ever again, and if you did the other things well, they'd be fine. Like, to me, the problem is it's the way that they do it that's the issue. But, you know, you had Sky Blue winning a quick little match over Holly Hood Haley, and it's like, let's stop being so stupidly cute with these names. In with no context. If you're a jobber, just have a basic name. If you don't have a basic name, give us the backstory on it.
The tag team before House of Black came out had like one of the guys had, you know, needlessly complicated name too. Like, whatever happened to, like, you know, Biff and Jeff or whatever, you know.
You're talking about Bad Thad Brown?
Yeah, like it's a tongue twister. It's like some kind of rib or something.
Yep. No, I agree. So, yeah, we had FTR and a squash that was just an excuse to get House of Black out there again. And then, you know, the Sky Blue squash was fine. I mean, it lasted 2 minutes, and she won. It didn't have a lot of energy to it, but her gimmick is sort of like she's just floating out there. But, okay, Sean, let's pause. Let's formally introduce ourselves here. We're pretty deep into our conversation. Then we'll kind of focus in on a few things as we progress here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, October 21st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Post Shows and Podcasts. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe to the Red Logo Show and the Blue Logo Show if you haven't already, and that'll get all of our that gets you all of the shows that I host during the week that are free. Then you can become a VIP member and hear the shows that I do that are just for VIP members, like Everything with Rich and Wade, The Fix with Todd Martin, Wade Keller Hotlines, Post PLE and Pay-Per-View Roundtables, and more. PWTorch.com/GoVIP gives you full information on signing up through credit card, debit card, PayPal, through Patreon, and also directly using your Apple account on your iPhone. Lots of ways to get our VIP podcast, different tiers, different pricing. Check out full details again at PWTorch.com/GoVIP. One of the perks is you get access to our ad-free website, which has all the content of our free website, plus bonus content, and ad-free versions of the free shows like this one. So you don't have to deal with the commercial interruptions, and you just get to listen to a streamlined version of the show, sometimes with VIP-exclusive after shows. So lots of good reasons to go VIP. Check it out if you haven't yet. The other voice here on the show is Sean Radican. He is a Pro Wrestling Torch columnist and PW Torch contributor for over 20 years. You can read some of his original contributions to pwtorch.com in our 20 years ago flashbacks with his SmackDown TV reports. Those are fun to look back on, Sean. We talked about that last time. And he has covered for many years, primarily his beat was Ring of Honor. He's done a lot on New Japan in recent years, and he is my co-host tonight as we talk about AEW Collision. His columns appear exclusively in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter also. That's one of the VIP perks in text or written article format. Sean, welcome to the co-host chair.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. So if you want to join us, we actually have nobody on. We have some people who called and listened in, but no one who wants to join the conversation. I know Battle of the Belts is going on, and I sort of figure that might happen. So I'll give a little extra nudge to anybody out there who is live streaming the show and wants to converse with us and maybe break away from watching Battle of the Belts. We'd love to hear from you, first-time callers or regulars or infrequent callers. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can just call that number and listen in, and that's fine too. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so we got a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about what's going on with Miro and CJ. And Action Andretti this week, although he probably won't be part of the storyline going forward. That's another topic we haven't touched on. I want to get into, and some other things too that we've only just touched on. But we do have Erico 314 who has signaled they want to join the show. So let's just start there. Erico 314, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, my name is Don. How you guys doing tonight?
Good. I couldn't hear your first name, and tell us your city too.
My name is Don in St. Louis.
Spell your first name. It sounds like Zahn, you're saying. Is that right? Z-A-N?
No, A-Z-A-A-N.
Oh, cool. Oh, Azan. Sure, sure. Yeah, okay. Gotcha. Yep. Sorry, I just couldn't hear you in my headset here. Yeah, Azan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Well, it was a C-plus show, to be honest. But my issue with the whole Jeff Jarrett thing is too – I get getting Dre Lethal title set, but you could have done it a different way. Either have Dre Lethal beat him or not. It's just like I understand Tony kind of likes to give people hometown wins, but it's getting kind of lame at this point. I also appreciate Dave Brown being there.
I love seeing Dave Brown. He was in the 1980s when Memphis Wrestling went into syndication, and Dave Brown and Lance Russell were the hosts of the WMC studio show in Memphis. It was a really highly regarded show for hardcore fans at that time, and it was tape traders loved it, and it had some of the best promos going on in pro wrestling at that time. Memphis and the AWA were really known for that, and Lance Russell was a star. I mean, Lance Russell was the best at interviews and had a real distinct play-by-play approach at his peak. But Dave Brown, who was a local weatherman there, was an institution and a staple alongside Lance. And then he eventually hosted the show when Lance went to WCW. I've interviewed Dave. He is exactly what you see on TV, just a straightforward, nice guy. Like, not a lot of bombast, but brings a sincerity to his commentary. I wish they got a little more out of him on commentary. I didn't think that... they featured him quite enough. They kind of left him just to fill in some dead spots. So I don't give the announce team a real high score in terms of being really engaging with him for him, you know, as a legend, getting a chance to do some commentary. But he also might not be super familiar with the product, so there's only, you know, so much you can do with references to concession stand brawls and a Tupelo, Mississippi reference, which, of course, Dave Brown's going to know and bring up. So I thought that was a nice touch. And one of the strengths of Tony Khan is acknowledging wrestling history. And when they go to towns like this, having tip of the hat to something that was local. But I do agree. I do not think under any circumstances Jeff Jarrett should be competitive, much less beating Eddie Kingston, even if it's to set up a match later for a title. And I mean, it's not even a dig at Jeff Jarrett. I mean, it's just a fact. Jarrett's in his late 50s. He's not a serious wrestler. He's, you know, he brings the circus to the ring with him, and he does old style Southern circus style wrestling that I think in 2023 feels kind of patronizing. And I don't think AW's audience, I think there's a lot today's wrestlers can learn from Jarrett, but I think tone wise, it needs to be augmented for the modern era. And I don't think Jarrett and Sanjay and Jay and Satnam pull that off. And so to me, and I wrote this in my TV report at pwtorch.com tonight during the show, I thought that this was similar to the Public Enemy, who were this street tough team with an edge in ECW, who just became cartoon wrestlers when they made it to national cable. They lost their edge and they were just used as sort of a clown tag team. And I thought Eddie lost some of his cred in this match, partaking and sharing space with a mid-card cartoon act that Jeff Jarrett is the head of. Sean, what did you think watching this? And you can comment on Dave Brown too.
It's always great to see a legend like Dave Brown. I thought you hit the nail on the head, so to speak, about him not being, you know, propped up to shine, so to speak, but it was cool to see him there.
Or even give more context of who he is and what a big deal he is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, They can't be bothered to do that because Tony Khan thinks everybody watching TV has read every wrestling book and knows everything about wrestling history. They think Tony Khan books to a bunch of Tony Khans. You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't it be cool to see Dave Brown? Yep. So put him on TV and all the Tony Khans in the TV audience will love seeing Dave Brown. It's like not everybody knows what Tony Khan knows, so it's frustrating. Anyway, go ahead.
Why if you beat someone 5-on-1, you know what I mean? Like, not only was it ridiculous watching Eddie Kingston participate in this, but why in the world is a title, shot being granted to someone else that's participating in essentially a 5-on-1 match? And granted, Kingston fought them off for much of the match, but, you know, when they got to the catch, you know, the screaming and the ketchup and the mustard, and it felt, I thought I was back in the asylum with Jeff Jarrett again, you know.
I know.
Wednesday.
Yep.
It was like, you know,
totally.
Back when, I don't know if I'm doing the same thing, making an outdated reference to the old NWA TNA, days. But I just felt like it felt so outdated and corny. And, like, it just, I just, like, like, it just blew my mind. I was like, this is so stupid. Like, five people, like, Jay Lethal wins, so what? I mean, Jeff Jarrett wins, so what? Jay Lethal gets a title shot, and on top of it, it took five of them to beat him. I just thought this was absurd.
I did too. I just, I mean, I know they're in Memphis, and I know that's where Jarrett's from, but you're playing to a national cable audience, and if you're going to throw Jarrett in there and give him and have him, quote, earn a title match, have him look like he earned it. I mean, there's just, again, there's so many, you've touched on some other aspects of it, Sean, that I did, but there's so many things about that segment. Again, it's entertaining, but it's Southern-style wrestling dropped into AEW, which in theory should have a very different tone than what Jeff Jarrett is presenting if they want to stand out in the marketplace. And Jarrett does what he does well, but it's out of place in 2023. It's out of place for what AEW should be. And then you just add the absurdity of earning a title shot in a street fight with no rules while there's no rules. So if Jarrett wins with help of a handful of other people, now what does that mean to the prestige of championships if that cartoonish, absurd way gets you a title shot? And I don't think Tony Khan thinks about that stuff, and it does hurt the company. It really hurts fans taking anything seriously when it's that much of a farce. And this was a farce.
And I can't think of many ways in which I'd like, you know, someone winning to earn someone else a title shot. But this definitely wasn't it, you know. I just thought it was absurd that, like, they briefly said that the ROH board of directors, Stokely Hathaway, came up with this. It just felt like the single dumbest idea I've ever heard. You're going to have a match where a five-on-one match where the guy that wins doesn't even earn the shot. Like, why not just put Lethal, you know? At least have him do an eliminator. So, like, I don't want to try to make it better because it was,
yeah,
it was so bad. But
I don't want to belabor the point, but nobody who happens to tune in to an AEW TV show and sees Sanjay Dutt's over-the-top cartoonish character is Satnam Singh doing some dumbed-down giant gimmick that Vince McMahon would have done 15 years ago and 10 years ago, and Jay Lethal doing what Eddie Kingston dressed him down for doing, which is just being a clown in a clown show. And then seeing Jeff Jarrett, you know, who, again, there's a lot I respect about Jeff Jarrett, but he shouldn't be against Eddie Kingston and anywhere near a title shot in 2023 on an AEW TV show. It just, again, this show really had a lot of things about it that didn't work for me. And I just think Tony Khan's like, well, I got 104 two-hour primetime cable shows to fill a year. If we're in Memphis, let's just come up with an idea on the way to the arena to do a Memphis street fight. And don't get me started on I don't swear much, but I won't swear. The stupid fake concession table they set up where it's like, oh, let's put a folding table and a tablecloth over it.
I thought the same thing.
And it's not even near the fans. It's just a prop for the wrestlers to use. And it's just an eye roll. It almost seems like a parody. It almost seems like somebody making fun of wrestling. You know, doing some.
I'll
sort
give
of
them
spoof.
Credit. They found the typical mat you saw when I was growing up in the 80s at the family. You know what I mean? For the barbecue table, I was like,
yep.
This is really corny. Like, it's right next to the entrance stage too, and the announcer's like, yeah, it's a concession table for the fans.
And this is like the 17th most annoying thing about that, but I didn't say it yet. Did they store hot dogs in a cooler? Did Kingston reach into a cooler?
I think that was the idea.
Who puts hot dogs in a cooler? That's not where hot dogs go. I mean, I go through stuff quickly, but so maybe I'm wrong, but if they put hot dogs in a
steamer,
cooler.
Usually.
Yes, exactly. So it's just so half-assed. It's so half-assed and derivative and out of date. And it's an uncool clown show, patching together a bunch of different visions with no cohesion and filling 2 hours of TV time. Tony Khan's spread too thin. Or if he's not spread too thin, he doesn't have an idea of how to put consistently a coherent two-hour cable show with a real identity and vibe together start to finish that's going to improve business. And I don't watch shows like this and have optimism that AEW is going to grow. I mean, they had 2,000 and change in a 19,000 seat NBA arena tonight. I mean, there's not, they're going to run out of how tight they can aim a camera pretty soon. and not show how blackened the rest of the arena is. And at some point, you got to stop patting yourself on the back for Booker of the Year awards that mean nothing in the context of who's going to watch or not watch your show, or lean on the Wembley Stadium or whatever. At some point, he's got to go. There's probably something we can do to make this better. And I don't know if he's asking. I'm just asking people that for honest feedback, or the right people for honest feedback at this point. Sorry to rant so much, but I mean, that match, Jeff Jarrett and Eddie Kingston, it's so illustrative of how tone deaf I think the tone of AEW has become. Let me throw back to Azan, because we certainly beat up on that, but I'm glad you brought it up. I had some things to say about it. Anything you want to add?
No. You phrase that pretty well.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Go ahead with anything else.
My other point is, what do you think about the whole devil thing? So I know it's last week on Dynamite, Roddy Strong said he's going to have to help that scumbag. And again, the devil showed up. Like, this is the second time he showed up. You think there's a connection? And what do you think about the lack of energy from the Bang Bang game tonight?
There's something about your connection. I don't know if you're on Bluetooth or not. I just couldn't make out much of anything you just said, honestly. Are you on
sorry
Bluetooth
about
or on
phone? No, let me do it. Let me repeat myself. What do you think about the Bullet Club stuff tonight? And what do you think about the devil coming back after Roddy said he had to help his son back? You get it that time?
Sean, did you?
He was asking about what do we think about the Bullet Club and the devil stuff tonight.
Oh, the devil stuff. That's what I – that's the that, – I just couldn't quite get that. That could be
– Yeah, I think he undid something and it came – I could understand him a little
sure.
better.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, he might have better headset than me.
I also the point of Roddy Strong coming back, like the Roddy Strong connection from this week. You see any connection between that? That also.
Yeah, what did Roderick Strong do, Sean?
I'm not sure. What's he talking about? Sorry, I must have missed it.
Like the video where he said he had to help.
That help from
the
devil? The
video where he said, yes.
Yeah. I mean, this is a storyline that has lost some of its bite in the time that has passed since it happened. Because if it, first of all, I thought it was preposterous that Nigel McGuinness, I think it was Nigel, but maybe someone else too, was saying, well, it's obviously MJF if he's wearing a devil mask. And it's like, that's insulting to the audience. Everybody knows it's not MJF, because if MJF wanted people to know it was him, he would have not worn a mask. If he didn't want people to know it was him, he wouldn't wear a mask associated with him. So it's just stupid. I mean, the whole premise is just stupid. It's low IQ drivel. And so I don't know if people are all that invested in it, but yeah, you have the video interrupt with the guy in the devil mask looking around aimlessly. And then you have Jay White and the guns looking around like they're spooked by it. And I honestly didn't give any more thought to it after it happened, because I'm not really invested in it and I don't really trust the storyline. Or I shouldn't say I don't trust it. I know they have something in mind, but I'm not particularly intrigued by it at the moment. Sean, where do you think they're going with it?
I'm not sure, but I don't know if you noticed it, but the one thing I noticed was when they did like a static thing and Jay White's knife, you know, sound from his entrance theme played when the static came. And I don't know if anyone picked up on that.
What would that mean?
Somehow Jay White has orchestrated all this to frame MJF in some way. I mean, the storytelling's been so poor that
So the idea would be it's a red herring that they're acting scared because it's actually Jay, or if
someone
Jay,
associated with him,
or did Jay orchestrate it originally, and now MJF is messing with him by actually wearing the mask now to try to spook Jay because he knows it's Jay. I genuinely have no idea. Azan, what do you? Well, go ahead, Sean. Yeah, for sure.
The only thing I got out of it was somehow Jay's orchestrating it, because why else would they play his knife sound when the static came? I think it was like a clue, like,
well, what
they'll go back to.
Well,
I don't trust the storytelling enough to be confident in that, to be honest.
It is a clue, but why would Jay put his own knife sound in it to give us a clue if the goal is to throw
it
off? Like, that's also just stupid if that's
right.
What you're doing. But I don't think your theory is stupid. I think it's a valid theory. I just think it's not beyond them to do something so stupid as to say, we're going to drop an Easter egg in there, which makes no sense for the person orchestrating the con to want included to clue everybody in. But Azan, I don't know. What do you think? And if Roderick Strong's involved, then, you know, it could be the goofballs hanging out at Strong's house orchestrating this too.
Yeah, I think it's that, because I feel like Roddy Strong's going to help MJF at the pay-per-view in some type of fashion, because I feel like they're building it up to maybe they're going to do like a ROH tag title match. Well, I think it's dumb where Roddy turns on MJF, obviously. Something along those lines.
So what, you think Roddy's going to turn on MJF or help MJF? I heard both, I think.
Are you going to help him? He's going to help him. He's going to help him first, but then down the line, some situation, they're going to have to be a tag team, and Roddy's going to turn on him. Like MJF is going to fall.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, and I want to give a little bit of slack. I say this with a lot of MJF feuds, but when things get thrown off, you sort of, and they have to recalibrate and regroup and time things differently. I want to give them some slack if it doesn't seem to make sense because Adam Cole's out with an injury. But to me, the only sensible solution or resolution to what we're watching is that Adam Cole is actually friends, has already turned on MJF, and he's friends with Strong and Taven and Bennett, and these skits are just joke skits that they put together to try to fill time and deceive MJF into thinking Adam Cole's getting abused by Strong and sort of, you know, strong-armed into doing these household tasks week after week, which, again, is absurd and stupid and preposterous. But if it's a skit that's meant – that actually is Adam Cole wanting to be there because he's not loyal to MJF, then I could see Strong or Cole pretending to be friends with MJF, but ultimately costing him his match, perhaps as soon as the match against Jay White. But, boy, it's going to be tough because the tone of those skits is so silly that if it turns out it's a con by Cole and Strong and company, we have to sit here and believe that Cole actually did hang out for 3 weeks without self-service and do household chores with one leg while two able-bodied men, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, sat around and laughed at him or watched him. And I don't know how Adam Cole – if Adam Cole isn't part of this and it's not a con, it's not a joke, then I don't know how anyone can take Adam Cole seriously again. It's just – he just becomes a slapstick lower card wrestler. If it's part of a con, then – why are we supposed to believe something as preposterous as he's hanging out there for 3 weeks doing household tasks? It's just dumb. I mean, no matter what the resolution, there's a better way out than there's better and worse ways out of it. But I mean, ultimately it's not well done and it's insulting to the audience, unfortunately, because, and again, this maybe would have played out in a more sensible way if they didn't have the Cole injury and that threw things off, but it doesn't change the fact that the end result, I think, I don't really know how they can make this a really strong angle, no matter what the payoff is. Don, do you want to respond to any of that or bring anything else up?
I'd bring them up. I know Ricky Starks got beat down tonight, but I feel like lately with the booking of Collision, he's been like the star of the show more than like Punk and Danielson were. In a way, I feel like it's Tony Khan trying his best to make sure he don't go to WWE. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, being tag champs is nice, but if you're going to make Starks, if you want Starks to seem like a star, you can't have him and Big Bill defending tag team titles and not let Starks flex in the 90 minutes leading up to that match with a standout promo talking about defending the tag team titles. He wasted time in the ring in a very counterproductive exchange with Adam Copeland that might go nowhere, and pretty much they're better off never bringing it up again because it was so self-destructive to both acts, which I put an article up today on pwtorch.com about that, in addition to my commentary last week and my rants on my VIP hotline about it last weekend.
Wow.
And so I think you need Starks to be treated and framed as a star in ways that don't consist of just having him do a ring entrance and wrestle. And that's not how you make stars. It's just having them do their ring entrance and wrestle. So if he's going to be tag champs and defend the titles, make it seem like a really big deal. And let's hear from Claudio and Wheeler Yuta beforehand too, and have more of a backstory setting it up. So I don't know. I mean, I think Danielson feels like the star of Collision right now, but not by much over Starks and Bill, and not by much over Miro for that matter. And now you have House of Black back in the mix. I don't know. I mean, Sean, what do you? Do you have a sense watching this show? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Did you see what they just announced with, like, no belt? Battle of the belts.
No, because I was talking about Collision and making a
point. Well, I only noticed it because the graphic, they announced Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli against Orange Cassidy, and Okada's going to come to Philadelphia on Wednesday because of Shiro Okada.
Oh, my God.
They just, like, just casually coming in on a Wednesday.
to team with Orange Cassidy again. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, back to my question, Sean, if I can remember my point. But that is startling. Startling underutilization of Okada. And very emblematic of AEW at this point. Who do you think what most people would say is a star of Collision if before it was CM Punk and FTR?
I don't know. I would say Ricky, but then they just, like, tonight was just very much, you know what I mean? Took him out of that. Because you made the point, you know, there was no promo for the tag title match. There was no build for it.
And he gets beat up. I mean, who is Ricky Starks? What is Ricky Starks? He's a good promo who needs real guidance and bullet points and direction and focus every week to really establish how fans are supposed to feel about him. And I don't know what his identity is right now. Azan, I don't. I mean, is he pretty Ricky? He's well-dressed. He's arrogant and likes the finer things. Is he a vanilla midget? As Copeland called him last week, which is so off-brand for Copeland.
I thought that really hurt him, you know.
Yeah, to me it hurt Copeland. It hurt Copeland as much as Starks, because how many people are going, wait, you're using that tired, lame line from the 90s that was meant to demean good wrestlers who weren't tall? Like, why would you go to that insult? Like, what would prompt you, even if you're irked with things Starks said, what would cause you to say that about somebody who AEW is trying to build up as a big deal, who people don't think is vanilla because he's not, and they don't think he's a midget because he's not? So it's a dated, bad insult that was never well received by fans. It was a heel line.
He just never even struck me as the type to go there. You know what I mean? Which made me even more surprised.
It's a total heel line. It's totally out of date, and it doesn't apply to the guy you threw it at. So it showed terrible instincts. Terrible instincts. And the sad part is nobody in AEW seems to think it's a big deal. Like, nobody – I don't think it registered with anyone as a big deal. But check out what Todd Martin had to say, because we have that transcribed in an audio snippet on pwtorch.com right now, right by my Collision report. And you can hear what Todd had to say about it also. If Starks is the center of the show, is on, they got to do a much better job framing him in a consistent, clear way and protecting him. And
I don't think they've decided yet, you know, just. Sometimes I think it's Brian. Sometimes I think it's Mox. Maybe, but it's just
It's
hard to tell because they kind of, you know, Starks get on a roll and then, you know.
Well, you can't
like
be the centerpiece. You can't be the centerpiece act of Collision and be in a tag team with Big Bill. I mean, like, you can be a big star, but you can't be the centerpiece. That's not a centerpiece. The tag team titles just aren't protected enough to be a centerpiece star, a place for a centerpiece star. So it'd have to be a singles competitor. And that's why I don't think there is a clear-cut top star on Collision, but Danielson seems to be like the go-to guy. But I think Tony's still trying to figure out the identity of Collision right now.
Unfortunately, it felt
like an afterthought tonight, Sean.
When WWE used to do those heel beatdowns, they used to do them when the cameras went off, you know, like, you know, if they had a top heel get put out by all the baby faces.
Yeah.
Like, Tony's doing the post show, you know, the fun for the local fans, but everyone's watching it on cable, and you don't want everyone to see your top heel act. It's one thing to do it, you know, because it's fun for the live audience. It doesn't hurt anyone because only they see it, you know? And he left the cameras rolling. It's like, God, it's a simple rule of pro wrestling, how you present your stars. And he just looks like a clown getting beat up.
Yeah, no, I agree. Azan, anything else you want to add to that or anything else?
What do you think about Miro lately? I feel like he lately has been like, I don't feel like Tony's not taking him off. I feel like his stuff is taking himself off. I feel like he don't really want to come to work for whatever reason. He got a good storyline going on with his wife, but I feel like he's not really invested. It was a good match tonight, good little Action Andretti got a little bit of fire, but it was basically a squash. But what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the storyline's a mess, too. I don't know who we're supposed to like. Miro wants CJ to stay at home like a dutiful housewife. is that a baby face? Then Action Andretti, like, make the pass at CJ, and she giggles like a schoolgirl last week, completely out of character with every other way she presents herself. Miro is getting cheered out there. Fans are chanting his name, even though Action Andretti's supposed to be the baby face. But Action Andretti learned everything about how to talk about women from 1970s chauvinistic male game show host. So the whole thing is just a complete mess. There's no clear-cut. Like, there's nothing clear-cut about how we're supposed to feel about anybody. Andretti's not a likable personality. Miro is supposed to be a heel, I think, by wanting CJ to stay at home. But people like him, so he's being pushed in a way that's out of step with how fans want him to be framed. It's just, to me, it's just a mess. Sean, can you explain it, or do you disagree with my framing of it?
No, I'm equally confused watching, you know. What are we supposed to make of this? CJ Perry comes out, the announcers, I think Nigel maybe goes, she's hot and flexible.
Well, that's what Miro says about her all the time.
So oh, okay. I digress then. But, yeah. It's just that I don't understand who I'm supposed to be rooting for here. You know, just the guy that's making cheesy passes, or the one who's a chauvinistic pig.
Or the woman at ringside who seems very serious and professional and says, if I can't manage you, I'm going to manage someone else because I want to lead some wrestlers to success, and I believe I can. So she seems very serious. And then Action Andretti, someone who I would think would not be at all appealing to her based on her taste in Miro and just wanting a man and not a boy, immature boy.
Right.
Giggles like a little schoolgirl because he showed interest in her and said, call me. I mean, I just can't think of constructing this in a more not just idiotic way than they have. And then, yeah, I mean, Miro should be, to me, Miro could be one of the centerpiece stars of Collision, but the way that he's telling his little story with CJ feels self-indulgent and counterintuitive and against what the fans want. And you can't even break it down to make sense of it at this point.
You almost wonder if some people have a lot of input into their own pro. You know what I mean? The way it comes
well, they all
across.
Do. I talk about that all the time. Everybody is. Everybody in AEW is on a little island writing their own stuff, and Tony's just going, okay, fine.
I know some people do, but it seems like everybody doesn't. Like, it seems like Jared's booking his programs.
The Acclaimed are doing their bit, you know, the Max Caster thing.
It's really weird.
It is. It is. It's not good. Well, Azan, what do you think of the Miro storyline right now? How are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling like this Miro needs to either, like, be serious, go after a belt or something, or just, like, stop being involved with his wife. Like, it's 2023. She's a woman. She's independent. And just let it be.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's not a flattering storyline for him. And I thought CJ was in good shape until how she reacted to Action Andretti last week. And, yeah, Action Andretti should be a heel. I know he's got a super flashy in-ring style, but there's a way to make that work because his personality and just the body language and the vibe he gives off is not root for this underdog. I know that's what they wanted to do when Jericho put him over, but he made it pretty clear from the first promo after that he's pretty clueless with how to present his character as a modern babyface in 2023. So, again, I mean, I know people have argued against scripted promos, and I have a lot. I mean, when I was doing the Steve Austin show weekly with him, that was a very common topic with Steve, take people off the scripts. But there's a lot of inexperienced people who have not learned about how the wrestling business works. They've just hit refresh on social media and have gone after that sugar rush buzz of getting attention on social media instead of learning how to cut a money promo. And there's too many people being given free rein without the leadership and the tutoring that's necessary before you give somebody a live mic on cable. And AEW doesn't have enough wrestlers who deserve a live mic on cable at this point to speak for themselves. So I'm not saying scripting's the answer, but there's something else you can do in between, which is before you hand a live mic to someone, tutor them, talk with them, work with them, have them practice what they're going to say, clear it. And AEW doesn't have the discipline or the staff to do it. And so we get disasters like the Starks-Copeland thing last week, that initial Action Andretti promo, the nonsense they did last week with Andretti and CJ. I mean, there's just so many correctable errors on AEW constantly. And the only way to defend the product is there's really good wrestlers having good matches. And that's going to get you 2,800 people in a 19,000-seat building. If you want to grow beyond that, you need to have a consistent tone and tenor. It has to seem cool again. It doesn't. And I mean, in this, and by the way, I'm not just saying, this is wrestlers in AEW who are lamenting what AEW has become are telling me this. Like, this isn't some outsider going, you know, I mean, not that there's anything wrong, because the intended audience is the TV viewers, and I'm one of them. But in the company, the feeling is that AEW has lost the cool factor, too. And there's a lot of frustration with it. So these things are so easily correctable, but it's the product of a lack of vision and an overwhelmed, burned-out booker. I mean, that's what these shows feel like. 3 out of 4 episodes of Dynamite and Collision feel like the product of a overwhelmed, burned out booker. And I take no pleasure in saying that. I like Tony, but the truth is the truth, and that is my opinion. You know, that is my true opinion of what we're watching week to week right now. Don, any quick closing words?
What do you think about Sky Blue Trunks? I feel like they finally given her something, and it's kind of unique. I'm not cold on it. I'm not hot on it. I'm lukewarm on it.
Yeah.
What do you think? That's my last point. Thank you.
Cool. Good. Thanks for calling. Yeah, Sky Blue, I mean, undergoing a change. I mean, I think having more women in the women's division featured consistently on TV with a distinct journey that they're on, and in her case, a change in personality and attitude and look and demeanor, can get people more invested in her than if she just gets to the ring and smiles and wrestles an average match and people talk about how sweet she is. So they're doing something with her, so I give them some credit for that. But it's so spread out. The storyline is so spread out inconsistently over multiple shows. And boy, Billy Gunn's punches. I'm going to interrupt. Billy Gunn's punches just look horrible on television right now against Menard and Parker. Jesus. Anyway, it was hard to not comment on that as I watched a series of really bad punches from a veteran like Billy. I'm not sure who to blame there. I guess there's a lot to share. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm fine with it. I'm kind of got Athan's tone. I mean, they're doing something with her, and she's, you know, spooky and all that, I guess now, and has a little change in approach. So, I mean, I encourage that type of effort being made, but you know, AEW does not have good storytellers on commentary or producing the segments that introduce things. So I just don't think they're telling the Sky Blue story well. I think they get a C, not a B, not an A, but a C for how they're telling the story. But it's better than nothing, Sean. It's better than they're doing with most of the women of the division. How about you?
Hopefully that's not the title of the AEW history book in 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully it's not a history book.
Or, you know, the tale so far. Cause,
well, you might be right.
Maybe they can get by doing this for a long time. But, yeah, you know, the Miz gave a big, put a big transformation in Julia Hart, and it's put somewhat of a transformation in Sky Blue.
Yep.
So to tell that story, you've got to have consistent storytelling. And I don't know, like Sky Blue's transformation, she's got the eyeliner, but other than that, she just looks like slightly perturbed while she's, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no, that's the thing. It's not layered. It's not obvious what's going on with her, and they're just not good at telling that story. So that's
what
where
the announcers just go ahead.
No. What did you say about the announcers?
I was just gonna say, like, what if the announcers expressed concern, like, look at her eyes, look what's happened. Is what happened to Julia gonna happen to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's what I mean. They need better storytellers and commentary.
Like, it's just like, and that's not the commentator's fault, you know. I mean, like, Tony could be feeding them this, but
well, they could show up and do it on. They could show up and do it on their own too. But I mean, it should be. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, Tony Khan's lost confidence in Kevin Kelly. I mean, he was just in the background. Tony Schiavone was handling most of the color commentary. Kevin Kelly's been awful since being on Collision. He doesn't know the names of the finishers. His inflections are awful. He's in last place in our online poll for your favorite AEW announcer out of 8 candidates. He's not invested in the product. He showed up and acted like, well, I'm the greatest because I called New Japan and people have praised me for years. And he's just dropped the ball. And he's not good in this setting, and he's not being produced to be the best announcer that he's capable of being. But I don't know how good he's capable of being in a weekly episodic storytelling type environment. what he was good at in New Japan is not translated well, and I don't think he's brought the necessary effort to improve himself in the time that he's been on Collision. So that's been one of the bigger disappointments too, because a lot of people were understandably excited about Kelly being the voice of Collision, and now Ian's better than him. He's in last place in our poll, and I don't think that's wrong. It doesn't stand out as wrong, and now Tony Schiavone's doing the heavy lifting on Collision. So it's just – it's a mess, and it does fall on Tony Khan ultimately, because he's producing these guys, and I think you could produce the announcers to be instantly three times better than they are at a lot of key areas that AEW is weak in right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not only that, but it's just storytelling. You got to give people something, and it's not that hard in wrestling to do that. If you have your ducks lined up, you just execute it in terms of communicating with the wrestler, communicating with the announcers. Like, this week you go out there, Sky, and something about you is different. And whatever that is, the commentator's going to put, that's part of whatever this mist is doing to you. It's just, instead, it's just like, it's just like she's got dark eyeliner, like, you know, the eye.
Yeah.
She's just got the eyeliner on and nothing else matters. And
decide what they're going to be. Sit down and put in the work in the afternoons before the show and have a meeting and go, here are the wrestlers on the show. Here are the main things we want to get across about these wrestlers. Here's how we're going to go about it. Have notes in front of you, or just immersively know the product and have good instincts. I mean, Jim Ross showed up, and Jim Ross has been much maligned in AEW, but he walked out in the main event for the main event match and just took control. He joined in on commentary.
Coming off an Oklahoma win.
Okay, well, yes. And you know, I mean, some of it is Ross just, you know, going, look at these hard-hitting moves, you know, and all that, but he felt like this authoritative adult in the room relative to a lot. And I thought Schiavone did a solid job, you know, just showing enthusiasm and calling the moves. Nigel's been just okay, and Kevin Kelly's been way below par, but it just isn't – overall, it's not working.
Did you catch what he was wearing at ringside? Because I don't think they ever showed the announcers. They showed Nigel. He looked like he was, like, you know, wearing an outfit I might wear on my couch, like, on a given weeknight.
Sean, every week on Collision, he's dressed like he's going to the hardware store to pick up some nails for a weekend project.
I guess it's just regressed, and I didn't notice, because at first he was kind of
– It's not nothing. There should be sort of, not a dress code, but sort of a guidance for how you should dress. And he's very casual. Yeah. All right. I want to get to Joe in New York next. Joe, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Thanks for taking the call. I just gotta say,
yeah, sure.
I think the show completely sucked tonight. I mean, it was bad. It was match after match after match, which I think just kills AEW. They don't realize how much that turns people off. That is the original Ring of Honor that did that no one cared about, because they never got past a million viewers because of that. The original Ring of Honor was never on in New York, and that's why no one cared about it, because it was just match after match after match. What the hell was that hardcore match with Jeff Jarrett? I mean, really, that was that was so bad, and it was so long, and the guy's 50-plus years old. What the hell were they doing? And I mean, it is brutal. And Tony Khan, wake up. What are you doing? You're a 40-year-old guy acting like you're 20 years old. I mean, get in the game. Get in the product. Become a boss. You lost CM Punk a star because you couldn't control the locker room. That's the bottom line. He couldn't control the locker room. He couldn't tell the fellas, you work for me. Get in the ring and do what I tell you to do. That's the bottom line.
Yep. But I think we're, you know, we've learned about Tony and his leadership skills, and I don't get any sense from people in AEW that they see him as a really strong leader. I think they see he has strengths that they admire, but being a leader who commands respect from his wrestlers is not one of them. And it goes to even when he stood up with his headset on and started chanting CM Punk when CM Punk came back, and I reported on that. their people look at Tony as a big fan of professional wrestling, living out a fantasy, and they're there to get paid to put on dream matches for him. And there happens to be a camera pointed at it, and he happens to want to, you know, run a profitable business, but he isn't building a company that's in any way geared up to compete with WWE.
He can do that, but it's never going to be anything special. It's never going to matter because the independents has a million fans, 1 to 1.5 million fans, and that's what his audience is. He's never going to get the professional wrestling in the United States is storylines. You have to
don't
do
tell
that.
Gabe that. Don't tell
if you don't do that, you have no product. There is nothing there tonight that you had to watch. And they put match after match after match, right? Now, get this. You have an hour after that of Battle of the Belts, which is nothing but matches.
Yep.
So I don't get what this company's doing. Mm-hmm. They had a good show on Wednesday, right, where they did a lot of talking, and then they just did a complete 360 today. I mean, you're not going to go anywhere like that.
No, there wasn't enough wrestling on Wednesday, and there wasn't enough setting the stage, talking, and videos tonight. It was too extreme, and people should know what they're tuning in for when they tune into an AEW TV show, and they're not getting any sense of it right now because you don't know show to show week to week what AEW's identity or format is. Go ahead, Joe.
They are spread too thin, and remember when Tony used to come out and he'd say Rampage isn't going to be it when Rampage started. Rampage isn't going to be a B show; it's an A show. And the only reason it feels like a B show is because we had injuries, and I've had to keep stars off Rampage and use them on Dynamite. And it's kind of plausible. You know what I mean? It's kind of plausible that you could run with that. But CM Punk came and went, and he signed a lot of the when Cole and who else showed up on the Dragon showed up on the same Brian Danielson showed up on the same at All Out.
Yep.
So you had a plethora of stars at that point, and Rampage never felt better. And it's just such a bad idea to keep expanding when you can't handle what you're doing. He couldn't handle booking a second show because when he was able to put so much focus on the first show, I mean, the storytelling at times was really good. But as he's gotten spread out thinner and thinner, it's gotten worse and worse. And it's just, this 2 hours of Collision is like getting added on. It's just, it's scary that, it has this, we're not even, 6 months into it, and it already feels like, there's nights where it feels like a B show. It's really scary.
I would say Tony Khan is spread too thin. It's true, but I don't think that's the only problem because he's
booking, not only more TV, but now he's booking more pay-per-views and there's added on Ring of Honor pay-per-views. And
Sean, I'm stipulating
ahead,
all
I'll,
that.
I think you're making a different point.
I'm making
Go
a different
ahead.
Point than that. I'm stipulating to what you're saying. I agree that he is spread too thin, but I'm adding to it. I don't think if he only had 1 2-hour show, no football, no soccer, no ROH, only 4 pay-per-views a year, and a weekly 2-hour Dynamite show, I still don't know that it would be that the problems with the execution of the vision of the tone, the tenor, the identity of AEW and the booking would be as improved as it would need to be to negate a lot of the shortcomings and problems of the product. I think a lot of what we see that's weak with AEW is amplified because he's trying to do too much. But I don't think
it's exacerbated.
It's there's a lot more of what is wrong with what Tony Khan's shortcomings are. It's much more obvious when he spreads in and there's 5 hours of TV and ROH and all these pay-per-views. But I just don't think the only problem with Tony Khan's booking vision is that he's trying to do too much. It's not like he's trying to do too much of a good thing and it's watered down. If he only had 1 2-hour show a week, I think there would still be weaknesses that we'd see. But the thing is he would have the mental energy, the headspace to improve. We all should get better at our jobs over time. We all should adjust with the times, no matter what our job is. And I don't think Tony has the headspace, the bandwidth to ever reflect and take in criticism and not react defensively, but take it in and evaluate it, then ask trusted people, I'm hearing this. Is this true? Do I have a blind spot? Is this a weakness? Oh, okay, I trust your opinion. Do you think you can help me fix it? Oh, that's not your strength? Do you know someone who can? No? Let me go ask six other people who I trust. Is there someone I can bring in to help me in this area that I'm weak? And it's like every good writer should have someone who proofreads their stuff before it gets published. I mean, in today's era, that's hard to do with newsrooms being cut down so much. But you always want to have somebody read something that you're going to publish ahead of time and go, hey, I see what you're trying to say there. But I think you're going to go over their head, or this point is missing, or this isn't well said. Tony needs that, and I don't sense there's any kind of feedback loop that he's receptive to at this point because he's too busy doing too many other things to ever just slow down and do that. Or, unfortunately, he's too busy hitting refresh and getting mad at people on Twitter X. And you know, I know people in AEW, they say the number one thing that they think would help Tony Khan is to go dark on social media and not look at it for a month. Now, he'd probably get institutionalized because he won't know what to do with himself. But if he could get separate himself from a full month from getting wrapped up in stupid social media back and forth and instead focused on putting on the best wrestling shows he could, and that meant networking and talking and adding people to his creative team and his input and the people talking to him, the product will get better. But he's too wrapped up in that sugar rush of trying to get back at somebody on social media or in the feedback loop, the echo chamber of social media that makes him think the things he's doing well make up for all the nasty things that people say he doesn't do well. So anyway,
I think there's got to be someone he could find to help. You know what I mean? But maybe there isn't.
He's bouncing around from one thing to another, and then he's on social media too much. So even if he could find, I agree he can find someone. That's not my point. My point is he doesn't have any time in his week to find anyone because he's too busy hitting refresh on Twitter X and yelling at people on Twitter and then coming up with the next TV show that he has to book. And, of course, in his job, he's putting out fires. He's managing contracts. He's negotiating TV deals. He's trying to figure out how ROH can be successful. And he's a fan who wants to put on great matches, so he's excited about what – oh, Okada, yay. Well, that's nice, but as you said, Sean, not exactly the most glorious way to get the most out of a major guest star for your core audience, nor, and I'll make this point and then throw to you, nor is that enough time to get people who don't know why Okada is great excited about him in a way that will expand beyond his existing fan base. And there's way too much of that in AEW, where you super serve the existing fan base, but no sophisticated effort is made to expand that fan base, which, by the way, we're 4 years, 5 years into Kenny Omega being in that category and the Young Bucks being in that category. They've done almost nothing to make new people who didn't see his work in New Japan understand what makes him good unless they order pay-per-views and see his 4, 5, 6 really good matches a year on a good year. Sean.
I mean, he's definitely a product of this, the problems with some of the in our generation. You know what I mean? Just the constant craving for something from, you know what I mean, for social, for interaction, for news, for social media, and that's kind of how it feels like he booked, you know what I mean, especially Dynamite with something constantly happening, you know what I mean? And
It's like a stoner with a bowl of popcorn. It's like, I just swallowed my salty buttered popcorn. It was delicious. Oh, my God, I'm craving popcorn. Give me more. Oh, that's good. Oh, my God, I just swallowed the bite of popcorn. I need more. Give me more. It's like constant, and it you got to set it down sometimes. And reflect and let things settle and not just have the sugar, salt, fat rush of that social media gives him and good, exciting wrestling gives him. And it's manifesting more and more over time. And, I mean, I'm being hard on him tonight. And like I said, I personally like Tony, and I don't think anybody has a bad thing to say about him. I shouldn't say nobody has a bad thing to say about his person. Of course, some people do. He's a boss and a public figure, and he hasn't been perfect. But people generally think he's a good guy. Like, it's this
hell
is
yeah,
like, evil dude.
But, man,
is he just, like you said just there, Sean, he is addicted to short-term, ephemeral, sugar rush-type thrills. And he isn't showing the maturity to step back and have that big arching tone, tenor, identity to the promotion, pace things out, get the most out of things, and understand there's an audience beyond his little echo chamber on Twitter X. That he's not.
You
got
to take it's hard. Like I've been a victim of it myself. You know, just thinking that you know social media is the real world, and you find out it's not. You know, if someone says something and you don't like it, and life goes on if you don't.
Yes, it does.
You know.
And the thing is, the people who say something that upsets you that you want to respond to, In 20 minutes, they're not thinking about you anymore because they've said six other things to six other people, and they even forgot they said anything to you. But you feel the need to respond, or a lot of people do. It's like, just move on. Yeah. Anyway, Sean, let me go ahead. Let me throw back to Joe. Joe, we're ranting here. Do you want to join back in?
Sure. And let me just say this. One thing they could do to improve the product is put Jim Ross on the commentary team, not for one match, because he is a storyteller. Especially on Collision.
Yep.
I would put him on the commentary for the 2 hours. Pep him up. Make him feel good. Give him what he wants. Put him there with Chavani so he's with somebody his own age. But and Nigel's getting hurt because he's trying to be a heel, and he's undercutting his own commentary by putting in little sly remarks. Just call the match.
Yep.
I'd rather he just be straight.
That's something else I was going to bring up.
Than being a heel. But Jim Ross should be the commentator. He should be doing what Tony Schiavone is doing right now on Collision, because he's going to give them what they need, storytelling. And I know AEW fans don't like Jim Ross, but the fact is Jim Ross is telling you the truth. He's telling you why your product stinks. Huh? Listen to him. The man's been in the business 50 years. He built the WWF Attitude Era roster. I mean, the guy knows what he's doing. Just give it to him and let him do it.
Ross has been
to put him on there for the last 10 minutes is ridiculous. Yeah,
yeah. He's been through some health issues, and he's been a bit of a curmudgeon at times. And I think he's turned people off because of it. And I think some people see him as you know, his time has passed, and he's too old, or he's too unplugged, or he's too old school. But there is a lot, and Jim Ross is a person, in terms of the number of hours I've spent interviewing anyone, he's top five. Like, I have interviewed him over the last 30-plus years, 40-plus hours. And there's few people who, over those time periods, especially in the last 15 years, who I agree with more philosophically about what is timelessly needed structurally for what wrestlers do in the ring and say on the microphone to have the most positive effect on business. And I believe that Jim Ross, because of how he expresses himself, kind of grumpy and curmudgeon-y on live TV in a way that undercuts the product and should be said privately at times, has taken away the fact that what Jim Ross is saying a lot of the time is actually 100% correct and should be embraced, even if it's painful, by the wrestlers and Tony Khan and everybody else in AEW. He's not wrong most of the time, even if the way he delivers that message rubs people the wrong way sometimes. But you got to have Jim Ross, who's got energy and is healthy and is willing to contribute what you're saying, Joe, his wisdom and experience in a way that fits what AEW wants to be. But he would probably have some questions for Tony Khan. What do you want AEW to be? Is this the Jeff Jarrett clown show? Is it the acclaimed, let's take a social media gag and turn it into a storyline that leaves most viewers perplexed and befuddled? Is it end every match with a run-in? Do we like to flip lights on and off constantly as a substitution for coherent storytelling and character building and star making? I mean, there's a lot of things that Jim Ross would need to establish with Tony before the things he would do to change it for the better would even have the effect that they have, because you have to decide what you want to be. And right now, Tony Khan does not know what he wants AEW to be. He just wants people to say his pay-per-views are great because there's a lot of 4-star matches or 5 or 6-star matches and that nonsense.
Well, he should be trying to get those pay-per-views on a streaming service for $10. I mean, the $50, that thing is passed, because he don't have the stars to deliver that, where people are going to pop out 50, especially he wants to go to 12 pay-per-views a year. He don't have main events that I want to see that I'm willing to pay $50 for.
Yeah, it's tough to charge $50 to see it.
It's not that he don't have the roster. He doesn't develop the matches or tell them in a way where you want to see the match.
That's the key. Yeah, that's the key. I mean, there's just a lot of wrestlers who are underutilized, and there's a lot of great matches that have received acclaim in the echo chamber that Tony Khan lives in, but haven't expanded the audience of AEW in ways that, if the way they were framed and built up and tweaked and followed up on, they would be reaching a larger audience right now. There's a lot of talent that just isn't being utilized well. And as Sean said earlier, the Okada announcement is just on a show that's going to have the lowest viewership of probably anything on AEW this week is how they announced that. It's just it's kind of jaw-dropping and stunning sometimes.
And one more thing. Did anybody realize that Full Gear is like 4 weeks away, and this show did nothing for it, basically? I don't think it ever really mentioned it too much, very little. I mean, you wasted a week.
Yep. I know. I mean, generally, Tony thinks
how it always is.
If the last week or two you present a lineup, Tony thinks that's enough to
I'm
sell.
I'm not saying that's right.
Because everybody who is going to order the pay-per-view, he believes watches every week. So you don't need to announce a lineup until the last, 7 to 10 days. I disagree, and I think it's actually kind of a flawed approach, because I think if you tell some storylines need to wait till the last week before you announce the match. I mean, that's true. You want to hit a crescendo in the last show or two beforehand, but you should be hyping the show and having some, and this should be part of a deliberate formula of building a pay-per-view card. You should have some matches that you announce six or four weeks ahead of time. And then there's a couple other matches that you don't really kind of finalize until the last week or so beforehand, but you got to have a mix of both. And I don't think that thought has ever entered Tony Khan's mind as a strategy to deliberately plan out starting 2 months before pay-per-view to build it. I just don't think that's crossed his mind that we need to have a variety. We need, of the top six matches, we need to know three of them 5 weeks out. And we need to be promoting the hell out of them. And then the other three top matches, we want to announce in the last 3 weeks leading into the pay-per-view, with one of them being, there's that final angle or the final challenge accepted or the final winner of a tournament or whatever that leads to that other match. But it's just, I don't think he's organized enough to think in that way. And I think that's a weak point that would be easy to shore up, but there has to be an acknowledgement that that's a thing that would help, and then a strategy to implement it, an intention to implement the strategy. And that's not there.
What do you think the Sting gift is? And do you think they're going to do a good job with Sting between now and his retirement? Like, you think they're going to actually, tell stories through tag matches? You think they're going to have a good lead up to that match, or is he only going to do one match? What do you think?
I was wondering and sort of worried about the same thing. There's a chance he only has one more match. There's a chance. I mean, he's in his late 60s, so I don't know that he'd be having a ton of matches. Okay, mid 60s. Sorry, Sting. He should be having. He shouldn't be doing a lot of matches, but if his last match, if we know the date of his last match and we have, 4 plus months, I think they should get more out of him, and they should have two or three other matches that are ratings draws that you get a lot out of, and he should circle the date on the calendar and book backwards from there to help sell a pay-per-view or help draw pop a rating on Dynamite. But they haven't even done at times a good job with Sting, but most of the time not a good job with Sting in terms of protecting him and framing him as a star. Sometimes he just wandered out with Darby and nobody made a big deal out of it. And sometimes he just disappeared for weeks at a time and then show up and they would act like he was never gone. But again, that comes down to the attention to detail and, Tony Khan prioritizing his top stars and putting more thought into the shows than he does. It goes back to, Sean, what you said, your friend going, did he script the show on the way to the arena? Sometimes Sting just felt like an afterthought. Yeah. Sean, what do you think they will or should do with Sting?
Just build up to one last, use the time to build up to one match. That's what I'm kind of surprised. If he wants to retire and that's when he's going to do it, it's fine. But it's kind of as they're negotiating new TV deals with him and Danielson both tipping their hats.
Yeah.
I would ask them to wait, maybe till Double or Nothing, or you know what I mean?
But
to
me, in the meantime, I mean, I think you can build a one last match, but I don't think you have to only have one last match. I mean, if he's capable of having three more matches between now and his retirement match, but the whole key is don't just throw him out there on 4 days notice. Make it
I
feel
just have
like
no faith they could book three matches that would be of consequence.
Yeah. No, I fear that too. Joe, do you want to add to that?
No, just wondering, what do you think the gift is that Tony Khan's supposed to be giving him? I have no idea what that could be. That seems weird in a
hunch.
I'm not exactly sure.
I think it's going to be like a really expensive car, and it's just going to seem really weird. It's going to be really weird. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, what do you, What does a promoter buy a legendary wrestler as a billion-dollar promoter?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, what could it be?
I think it's going to be awkward. I mean, I think it's going to be awkward. I mean, the way Tony Schiavone built it up, it's like he knows or he was tipped off, and oh, it's going to be super special. It's like, I mean, if it's like a Lifetime Achievement Award trophy or plaque, that's nice, but it seems like the tone of this gift is different. So to me, it just comes across like he's going to buy him like a really cool like EV SUV or something.
Well, thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. All right, Zach, let's shift to an email here. Sean, let's shift to an email from Zach in Texas. He says, Eddie Kingston is the best promo in professional wrestling. It's promos like the one he cuts tonight that make mistakes like last week 100% worth it. In other words, not scripting everybody. You just can't get that with scripted recited lines. Eddie is so raw and real. You can feel every syllable of that promo. Him using Jay Lethal's government name just made it more emphatic. In one promo, he turned a match I didn't want to see into something I have to see. That's the power of a promo executed perfectly. I think it's telling that's all Zach had to say about the show. He didn't gush about it like he usually does. So maybe Zach didn't think it was a great show otherwise. Yes, to me, all I could think about is Eddie Kingston just got pinned by a guy in his late 50s doing a clown show act in the ring, old style Southern patronizing, a dated or out of date formula with a bunch of people acting like clowns around him. And it was so out of place. And so all I thought about is now Eddie Kingston's trying to get me to care about a match with one of Jeff Jarrett's clowns, Jay Lethal. If I separate myself from that, yeah. I mean, if you turn the volume down and you watch Eddie Kingston, there's nobody visually who's more convincing and passionate. If you listen to his words, they're very well delivered. I don't know that it's the best promo in wrestling, but it's the best in its category of somebody who really has passion and cares. It's like, you know, pro wrestling is the best friend who never gives back. You know, it's sort of this sad story in some ways, the way that he talks about the business and the sacrifices for it. But having people on your TV show who care about it that much resonates with so many fans. And you want wrestlers who seem to take it seriously. Max Caster, I thought a month ago, could be a centerpiece single star for AEW. I don't think that right now. I think he's damaged. I, 3 months ago, thought Adam Cole could still had it in him to be a centerpiece main event single star. I don't think that anymore. Like, damage is being done. And I think Eddie Kingston was damaged tonight by Jeff Jarrett. I think he's equipped to fix it. And I think, by the way, Caster and Adam Cole are equipped enough to fix it, but it's going to take some work. But Caster parading around with a smile on his face as he perpetuates upon the public an in-joke without the proper context, without a payoff that seems to make any sense, it's going to leave anybody better off. I mean, I'm willing to augment my opinion when I see it play out, but it just feels like they're just goofing around because they get paid either way, and this seems like something funny to do. But Max Caster suddenly having a crush on MJF and not having social skills is very different than the Max Caster character that fans were introduced to in the previous few years through AW Dark all the way through becoming a breakout star in the last year or so. And so damage can be done to different characters. And I thought Eddie was damaged tonight with that Jarrett match, but Eddie, unlike Action Andretti, for instance, can fix that or repair it or make up some lost ground. And that promo did. I'm still not going to say I'm as excited about Zach as I am, or Zach is in an Eddie Kingston, Jay Lethal match though. Yeah. But what he said rang true, but I don't think it rang as particularly important because I don't think there's a lot of AW viewers out there going, damn it, Jay Lethal. He was a real pro wrestler once, but now he's not. And I want Eddie Kingston to shake him back into reality. Jay Lethal's been imitating Ric Flair and Macho Man Savage and having this just, you know, silly grin on his face, clowning around for most of the last 10 years. So, And I don't think he's equipped to be what Eddie Kingston wants him to be. So in a sense, Eddie seems a little delusional or out of step with who Jay Lethal actually could have been had he tried to be something different. But he's not wrong about who he is now, but I think he's wrong about who he could have been. That was kind of my conclusion. But delivery, turn the volume down. Yeah, I mean, body language-wise and the tonality and delivery is great. Sean, your thoughts on tonight's Eddie Kingston promo?
I mean, I thought it was really good, but I couldn't take it seriously after he was just squirting someone with ketchup and mustard. You know,
which drove John
prior.
Moxley nuts, by the way. John Moxley hated doing that stuff in WWE, and now you got Eddie Kingston doing it on AEW.
This was supposed to be the place where that stuff didn't happen, and it's, I mean, it's those, you know, between that, I mean, there's several those movie sketch with Adam Cole and the Kingdom kind of drive me into that area too. Just terrible.
Their dorm room videos of people who are smoking weed. That's what those are.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to watch them. Nobody finds that stuff funny except the friends who took part in them. And we're subject to them.
I'm trying to think of it's like the Seth Rogen movie you don't want to see. That's basically.
Yeah, I mean, it might be given more credit.
It looks like that,
but,
except it's just not funny at all.
Yeah. Hey, let's do 7 camera angles of a peanut butter jelly sandwich being made with over-the-top cornball facial expressions, and then we're going to have Roddy Strong spit it out because he used to like him, but he doesn't like this one because Adam Cole just can't win. Really? That's how you want to spend 2 minutes of TV time on national cable? I mean, it's just head shaking. I mean, the quality control and the identity of AW is just lost right now.
Yeah.
All right.
It was supposed to be the place, the refuge for people looking for,
yep,
you know, consistency and normalcy and, you know, a place to hang their hat if they were burned out on WWE's booking style. And,
yep.
It's more like WWE than WWE is these days. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean, because WWE has changed in the last 4 years. And I don't know if maybe Tony Khan watches WWE start to finish every week. I don't know. I don't think so. Has anyone ever asked him that? But WWE is a much better product today than 4 years ago. Raw is a much better show.
I'd like to find the person to get on to ask them that, one of the scrums, if they can get beyond the other question.
I know. All right. Chris from New Jersey says, I personally see Roosh in the same tier of heels as Jay White, Swerve Strickland, and Samoa Joe. Is that too bold of a positioning for him? What do you think Roosh's ceiling is? Is Tony Khan capable of building him as a main event act, or is he an upper-level mid-carder? Sean, what do you think?
I think he's an upper-level mid-carder. I just haven't seen anything from him talking-wise that makes me think, hey, this guy could be better than Jay White. I mean, I don't even think Jay White's used correctly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you wrote a good column on that, yeah.
I'm happy he's in the main event scene, but this is just, it's like Tony never watched what he did in New Japan, what made him special. And now it feels like Jay White's kind of filling in some of the blanks on his promos, but it's not there.
Yep.
You know, the way he's presented. And, it's just, you know, you got to present, like, Andrade Alilo has never been known for his promos. He's a presence and match guy, and I think that caps you at upper mid-card and maybe visiting main events. But it just feels like he's pigeonholed in with a certain group. You know, when he's not wrestling a big match, he's pigeonholed in with the, with the mid-carders a lot of the time. And that kind of defines him down to a certain extent. And
also, he doesn't have the best reputation in terms of somebody you want to count on to be a rational storyline builder.
Yeah, he's part of that. That doesn't, that doesn't work for me, brother.
Exactly.
You know, community.
Yeah. And you need to have strong leadership in somebody. You know, you need to have like a Paul Heyman type who was one of his mad genius skills in ECW, which is taking somebody who had attitude problems or, butted heads with other promoters, and you just get them excited about your ideas and you get them on board and they will do whatever you say for you. And AEW doesn't have that person, and they don't know how to take someone's strengths and accentuate them and hide their weaknesses and get them excited to change their approach to things. They need that person. They need more than one person probably, but they don't have that, and it's not Tony Khan. And I think he's overrated. I think there's style-wise things he does that are eye-roll inducing. I think he's an amazing athlete and he does certain things really well, but he just, from what I hear, he doesn't come across as somebody who thinks he has room to improve or would care to listen to him.
He's not exactly trying to, you know what I mean? He's good enough where he can go and do what he does, but he's not exactly, he doesn't go the extra mile to stand out, what he does, it's not like he's taking, nights off like some of the wrestlers in New Japan do when they're in tags, so to speak.
Yeah.
But but he's definitely not advancing himself either. And I think that's just, you know, just he's, you know, he's there, he's allowed to do that, and he's just, he's in a position where I guess he just, he is what he is right now. And I, and you cited all the reasons. There's no one back behind the scenes to set an example and put people in their places and push people to their maximum potential. And if there was, maybe you could do something with them. But even, I mean, I just, it just feels like he's a quarter away from being, you know what I mean? Just something is missing.
Well, I think if you said, okay, if you wanted to get the most out of him in the way that would satisfy Chris from New Jersey, I think you, if you're Tony Khan, you need to sit down and with your, you know, creative minds team and go, our mission is between now and a date in the future, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, we're going to build Roosh up to a point where our fan base, outside of our little echo chamber on Twitter X, we want to build him up as a star. And what's the best way to do that? And what are the chapters of the way we're going to tell that story? Who are we willing to sacrifice and have him beat? What do we want fans to think after they watch his matches? What do we want fans to think after they see his ring entrance? What message do we want him to get across in promos? Is he the best person to deliver them? Should we have someone else do it? Should we do captions? All the questions that, you know, you look at what they did with Shinsuke Nakamura. And what will his entrance music be? What are the vignettes going to be? How often are we going to feature him? Is he going to be primarily Collision, or is he going to be a Dynamite Collision star on both? Who are the wrestlers he's going to beat? When we are 6 to 8 weeks into pushing him, what do we want every viewer to say about him? If they were to explain to a fellow fan who hasn't been watching AEW what Roosh is all about, what do we want that person to say to a friend who hasn't been watching? Figure out what that is, and then make damn sure everybody watching for 6 to 8 weeks has that drilled into them in creative and sensible ways to promote him, and then build him up for whatever title or whatever feud or whatever type of main event match you want. And then there's an end point, and you can say, we're either going to have him win or lose this big match we're building to, and we'll decide maybe 6 weeks out how we feel about how things are going. But we know damn well when that big match happens, 2, 4, 6, 8 months down the line, when we have this plan, we know we're going to get a lot more out of him than whatever we've been doing with him. And that's what they're doing with LA Knight in WWE. They understand there's shortcomings in him, and they understand there's a chance he's a fad, and they understand there's a chance he doesn't have the depth and the layering to be a long-term main event character. But they also know they're going to try to get the most they can out of him and be open-minded to the possibility he is a top centerpiece star for the next 2 to 3 years for them or beyond. But they also know he might not be. But they do know they're going to get the most out of him that they possibly can between now and the match against Roman Reigns at Crown Jewel. And that's... Yeah. What AEW needs to do with is go, here's somebody, and it doesn't have to be Roosh. I'm just pointing out because Chris pointed him out. But they need to pick a handful of people and go, this is the time that we are going to focus on this person, and we're going to spend half of a work day sitting down and devising a plan and really having a plan and not just going, oh, we should do a segment with Roosh, doing a little soundbite promo. Like, that depth of detail work is not present in AEW, and it's a bunch of wrestlers on an island unto themselves coming up with their own stuff, and it turns into a sketch comedy show. Sometimes it manifests as a soundbite with a Miro or House of Black or Darby Allin. Sometimes it's a video package. Sometimes it's a promo in the ring. Sometimes it's a match. But it's a sketch comedy show where everyone, just like in SNL, they go into little corners and they come up with their thing, and then they lobby for time and they get it, and then you stitch together a two-hour show.
You ask those questions, and there's like, well, if you're going to do it, you know, you said they could pick anybody, but there's so much fixing that need. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's just,
yeah.
Like, it just feels like, you know, even with MJF, they should sit down with him and say, this is what we're going to do with you, and this is what you're going to do, and you're not going to be, part of some, you know what I mean? Some of these ridiculous things part of, and I'm not going to put you in skits and, you know, like the oh, God, I can't remember his name. Juice. You know, the Juice Robinson with the Friedman on the quarters. We're not going to do that story because it's not one we can tell right now.
Yep.
It's not one that can be told effectively in this medium because in this universe, or, you know, I mean, people are just going to look at it. You hit all the points in your take, so I don't want to just, you know what I mean, this week,
yeah,
as to why it wouldn't work in pro wrestling, because anyone that came out being a racist piece of garbage would be, you know, terminated. But,
yep. Yep.
You know, just. But, you know, they need to sit down and say, this is what we want to do with you. This is what you're going to do. You're not going to do this. You're going to do this, this, and this. And it just, I just feel like that if they could do that, they'd really get on fire quickly. But it's just, I don't see it happening.
All right, Sean, anything else from Collision tonight that you want to comment on? Anything you took notes on or a mental note?
Just Nigel healing up on Danielson so much was weird. Like, it makes me think maybe he's one of Danielson's matches at some point. He posted himself in his gear before, the Big London, the All Out. All In, the Big London show.
I saw those two have a 6-minute draw once, and I would not mind seeing them wrestle again, but I don't want to see an inferior version of it either. You know what I mean? Like, I want that mess.
Yeah.
I want that Matt, whatever it was, 2008, or I don't even know what year it would have taken place.
He is in tip-top shape, though. You know what I mean? Like, just the picture in his trunks.
Yeah. But still, like, I'm not saying, right, I don't see the match. I'm just saying be sure they're both ready to not go out there and pull a hamstring within, you know, the opening 4 minutes. I mean, I want, you know, but if Nigel could wrestle, then yeah, I mean, that should be on the bucket list of matches, but please make a story. Please tell a story that doesn't involve people who know intricately their story from 15 years ago only.
Oh God. Yeah. You got to do something more than that. And the only other thing is the caller talking about Ross having an expanded role. I just think he's, you know, at this stage of his life, he doesn't need that, you know? Like, tonight he seemed happy to be there for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you know, that segment.
Oh, yep, yep.
And that's really all he needs every week, you know, at this stage of his life and what he's been through.
Yep.
You know, over the last 5-10 years, I think he's perfect for that. I think they found a way to avoid him, getting Grumpy Jim on there, even if he is right about the things he says on commentary. It was nice to hear him tonight. The Ross that enhances matches and is on his game. That was fun to hear tonight. And that was the
I think that's what we're saying. If it's not realistic for Ross to have 2 hours of top tier energy every week, he should do just the main events on Collision. If he is feeling rejuvenated and he does have it in him, I'll take that over what we've seen with Kevin Kelly for 2 months. I'll take that over Tony Schiavone twice a week. Because it would give an identity to the show. But the question is that, does that just lead to a burned out, exhausted, grumpy, curmudgeon sounding Jim Ross? And if that's the case, then they found the sweet spot and he had some gravitas to a main event. I just don't know where Jim Ross is from a, you know, headspace standpoint in terms of what he wants to do. But if he's feeling like, hey, I'll help, I want to be, I mean, he doesn't want to, like, say, fire everybody else. Like, that'd be – but if he goes, if you want me to be the lead announcer of Collision for the next 6 months to try to get this – give the show a distinct voice and identity, and you want to hear from me more behind the scenes about how I would steer things, I'm feeling good and I want to do that. If I'm Tony Khan, I take him up on it. But if that's not where he is and he's got 20 minutes a week and he's winding down and he wants to, you know, do other things, then you got to – you know, you can't – you know, you don't want Jim Ross doing something he's not really into at this age and at this point.
And the only other thing is, I mean, they had three segments of House of Black turning the lights on and off multiple times. And it just, there needs to be some editing. You can't do that and do the devil thing, you know? It's just overkill.
I agree. All right, Sean, thank you. Been fun talking AW with you, even if I wish we had a show that we could compliment more than criticize and critique.
Yeah, I did like the, you know, the opener was very good with Danielson and Andrade, and I liked the main event, but I just felt like, you know, it just felt inconsequential, you know, just to the everything else that was going on after, you know what I mean? So it was one of the, probably one of the worst AEW crowds I've seen for a live show.
Worst in terms of the energy?
Yeah, the crowd energy. Just, I mean, they filled the building pretty good. They were in a really small space tonight, so that was good, I guess, from an aesthetic standpoint.
The way they aimed the camera, you know, did not accentuate the fact that it was 90. It was a building that was 80% empty.
Yeah, I don't even. I mean, they were set up for 3 and change. I forget. They just weren't far from selling up from what they set up for.
Right, but
it's not good either way. I mean, to go from, you know, just the decline in attendance is a problem.
You want to be in an environment where if you go to Memphis, Tennessee, where the Memphis Grizzlies play at FedEx Forum, and it's a 19,000 seat building, and you're basically pessimistically only putting 3,000 tickets on sale. And then you have to aim a hard cam at just the lower bowl section of fans opposite the hard cam, and everything else is darkened. I mean, that's not good.
Yeah, you're right. It's tough. Yeah, it's just and they even had the bear come out there. Like, it's just, there was a reminder. You know, it was almost a reminder. Like, oh, this is bad. Yeah, Memphis Grizzlies mascot came out with the Acclaimed. So.
Yes. All right, Sean, thank you very much.
All right, take
care. Enjoy the rest
of your
weekend. Yep, take care.
You too. Bye.
Thanks to our callers and emailers, and we'll talk to you all next time.